to the Short Coat Podcast. We are recording this on that most haunting of holidays, Halloween. It's the one night of the whole year on which medical students do things that they really shouldn't do. They bob for apples, thus potentially communicating diseases amongst themselves. They drink various beverages, which despite their best intentions might, by some accident of unintentional fermentation, contain ethanol, which is deleterious to their health. And they consume treats which, overdone, can lead to diabetes and heart disease. But we mustn't blame them, because they are young, and it's Halloween.
That was probably your best intro to it.
I'm really excited for Halloween now.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast.
And I would like to give you an extra clap for doing that and not laughing.
We're just breaking out next to you.
How are you all? I'm here today with Willis Hong.
Hello.
With Lisa Weir, with Cole Chaney.
Hello.
With Matt Maves.
Hello there.
Hi, guys.
Ooh. Dave, that was incredible.
Willis, you need to come right up close to your mic. This is Willis's first time, and we mustn't judge him.
Hello. Well, we called him out because he ditched out last time.
Whoa.
Yeah. Is the allegation.
I was supposedly sick.
He was busy.
Yeah, right.
He was busy. It's fine. Stop it. I want him to come back.
What is that? Did you just Google Halloween music? That doo-doo-doo?
That's the toccata.
It is.
Toccata and fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, my friend.
I was just going to question Mac. Who wrote that?
I was actually just going to ask Dave right after he finished it. Dave, now that you just played this amazing intro, who wrote that?
For 200.
I heard those notes, and the first thing I could think of was Lynn Ziegler.
That is definitely not what comes to
mind. That's not what came to mind for you?
No, I pushed that out of my mind long ago.
Ouch.
We're so NPR right now.
We're deep in the cultural references.
What do you expect? But there's two music majors here. Ugh.
Who's Lynn Ziegler?
I don't know.
She was the organ professor at Iowa State.
Oh, I was just going to pretend like it was somebody famous.
No, it's really not.
No.
Fair enough. No. Hey, you guys, what's going on for Halloween tonight? What are you guys doing?
Anyone have anything?
Matt and I are taking the puppy to an agility class. Okay, that's only part of our Halloween plans, but...
Damn.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
The last agility class, too.
It is.
Yeah. So, graduation.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys graduate from agility class?
The puppy does. We don't graduate.
Oh. I was like, do you jump through hoops?
What is agility class?
So it's like an obstacle course for dogs. So they like go over jumps and they have like A-frames. So it's like run up these like doors and down them and go through weak weave poles.
Oh my God.
Let me ask you, can you just send the puppy out to do the agility class and you sit on the sidelines and read a book?
Absolutely not. No.
Like, you do you, puppy.
But once you like train them really good, usually, I mean, it's off lead if you watch the actual trials, and the dogs do most of the running and the humans kind of run in a sort of circle and just be like, go there.
I might be able to handle that.
Our dog is not that well trained.
No, she's not.
What kind of dog do you have?
A Sheltie.
Oh, they're pretty smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they can figure that out. They'll graduate, right? What happens if you don't graduate? Do you fail?
Everyone graduates. As long as you don't quit, you graduate.
A puppy shame. I got the Jingle Cross this weekend.
What's that?
Jingle Cross. So it started in Iowa City.
This sounds very Christmassy. I know. I'm not sure I approve.
I know. Holiday. So it's a bike ride. It's outdoors. People dress up in all sorts of, usually Christmassy, but it becomes sort of Halloween themed as well. Mm-hmm. It's an outdoor, it's sort of muddy bicycle all-terrain race. Oh. It started in Iowa City, but Shields adopted it as the corporate sponsor, and it's become sort of a national, international deal.
That's cool.
I will note with some displeasure that Shields does not... does not support the podcast.
We should find ourselves some nice sponsors.
Did you ask them?
I have not asked them. You would think.
Do you think the Java House would sponsor us and we could all have coffee?
That's a great idea.
I like that idea. And I could talk about how much I love my Java House coffee.
Yeah. You know what?
It's true. They don't have to pay.
They totally would. And if we did the shows in the Java house, wouldn't that be sweet?
Yeah.
Well, all this talk of an intern, I think that could be a nice addition for them. Go around getting sponsors.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even
thought of that. All of these things that can be added to their resume.
All right.
Getting coffee.
We could like set up a live streaming video while we're taping it.
Oh, God.
And then everyone could see.
I kind of have a face for radio.
Cups.
I'm just going to be. What about actual Halloween stuff, though?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, there's a party tonight. Come on, come on, out with it.
What party?
No.
M1, what is there a party?
M1?
He's not an M1.
What are you? No,
he's like a girl. He's like a five.
I didn't know that. Sorry, I didn't know that.
No, there's the Phyro.
The epic Phyro party.
Yeah, all the M1s go to.
Yeah.
And then all the M4s try to go to, but don't make to.
They do a good job. This is well decorated. Last year I went and they had, I think, like big inflatable octopi, perhaps. Does that sound right?
I believe someone had an octopus costume.
No, I think he was actually a sea anemone.
Oh, that's right. It was a sea anemone.
Correction. A balloon based.
Anemone.
Overall, it's underwhelming, though, Dave. It seems like. I don't know if anyone's going to pull out a big Halloween crazy.
It gives Rubenstein a good chance to ask some, alcohol related biochem questions.
Oh, he loves that. It's his go to thing.
It is.
Definitely. But I don't
know. The Phyro party.
It's pretty scandalous.
Scandalous.
It's
okay. I noticed that Cole mispronounced mnemonic throughout the last.
What was I saying?
You were like mnemonic. As though it was powered by air.
It's like nuclear. Nuclear. Yeah.
It's all right. You're not the only one. Even on studentdoctor.org, they were all like spelling it mnemonic as though it was powered by air. So.
Pneumatic.
Yes.
That's the word.
Pneumatic. That's what you're going for.
I personally will be doing the traditional dad job of standing at the door handing out candy while my children go trick-or-treating.
What did you dress your children as?
I did not dress them as anything. They chose their own costumes, as children are wont to do. My daughter will be a vampire, and my son will be the 11th Doctor. Doctor Who. I did make for him a cyber planner facial prosthesis out of Sculpey. So I'm pretty proud of that, and my wife painted it. So
will you post this on the show notes?
Can I see this?
I think my wife has a picture of herself. I'm sure we'll get a picture of him tonight wearing it. We haven't. It's held on with wig tape. Wig tape, by the way, important
wig tape
costume resource.
Wig tape. It goes on the inside and sticks to your scalp.
Yes, I mean you've got to keep it on somehow.
Yeah, I figured they had those little elastic bands, like a fishnet, right? Like the late lunch thing. I don't know how. Doesn't sound very secure. I don't know.
How do you keep your wig on?
I don't know,
Dave.
What do you do with your wigs?
I have a dad theory.
All right.
I want you to confirm or deny.
All right.
The better your dad is at helping you on the Halloween costume, the worst he will be for the boxcar derby. It's one or the other.
So what do you base that observation on?
I'm saying that the Ron Swanson type is going to be the fantastic. He's gonna have the edges, and it's going to be
fastest.
It's gonna be fast. It's gonna be aerodynamic, but he's not gonna really understand who the 11th Doctor is.
Oh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying vice versa. The 11th Doctor guy might not be the best with a belt sander. What do you think about this?
I myself am sort of in between those two extremes.
I'm a hybrid.
I can operate a belt sander, and I can appreciate Doctor Who, but I'm not a rabid Doctor Who fan like a certain wife I could name.
Which one?
Hey, you keep it down. Don't get him in trouble here.
and thus my children are Doctor Who fans as well. So, by the way, I have to give a shout out to my daughter Coraline, because she really likes to hear her name on the podcast.
We'd love to have her.
And
that would be awesome. Especially next week.
I don't even know if that's a good idea. Halloween. Happy Halloween.
Woo.
This, what's kind of lame about this is that the show will air in a week, but
delay.
That's all right.
Let's go live.
We can relive. Let's go live. We can relive the joy that is Halloween on Thursday of next week.
So if I listen to this 1 week from now, past Willis, decisions that you made on this night.
Yeah, we should revisit this on Friday.
We're wrong. We're bad choices.
Yes. Cole, I think you had something you wanted to discuss.
I had a number of things. Which one was the...
The nurse in Maine, Casey.
Oh, I was getting angry. I was getting sort of on my get off my lawn crotchety Cole. So you guys are hip to the Ebola nurse in Maine.
Oh, yeah.
Quarantined by judge order. And she decided that she's going to go for a bike ride.
Bike ride.
And so my extrapolating this into society is that this is a bigger part of the you do you society that we've crafted with the, you know, you're an individual and don't let anyone tell you what to do. And just because you have Ebola or maybe were exposed does not mean you have to stay inside your house. And I love that the judge cracked down the other day and said, listen, this is bigger than you, lady, and we need you to stay inside. I think it's 21-day period.
21, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could totally see why she's frustrated, but this is... It's a bit more global than you and your bike ride with the boyfriend or husband.
Yeah, that bike ride can wait.
Yeah.
But look, isn't there some truth to the fact that, you know, if she's symptom-free, then she is okay to be out riding a bike?
Yeah. I mean, as long as she's not, like, bleeding all over everyone while she's
which
biking.
Which one could do while, if you fell off your bike.
Yeah, if you fell off your bike, I guess.
Yeah, and it might purely be for publicity, right? Purely, we don't want to appear that we're sending people who possibly were exposed out. And, you know, really the scientific basis is rather maybe inconsequential. Maybe there's not a lot of basis for holding her back. But what about the appearance?
Well, here's the thing that I think is happening. This is my guess, and I just came to this conclusion. It's probably not very well thought out. But I just... right, very few of what I say is well thought out. But look, one of the things that I've noticed throughout this is that the nurses... are getting crapped on.
Oh,
they kind of are.
It's an interesting point.
By the CDC, by everybody. I think President Obama is the only one hugging nurses these days.
Yeah.
but I'll tell you why I think this. So we've got Nina Pham, the Dallas nurse, who was this past week discharged from the NIH hospital free of Ebola. But nurses, her fellow nurses, and probably, and if I were her, I might be a little upset, are pissed off at how the CDC blamed nurses for messing up Eric Duncan's travel history in the chart. So that's number one.
Yeah.
Actually, it turned out that a travel history was taken, but it wasn't. Okay, so the CDC said a travel history was taken, but it wasn't communicated to the people who were making decisions. They dropped the ball. Hopefully, this will never happen again. All right, so... Then we find out that the chief clinical officer for the hospital network, that includes Dallas Presbyterian, says that that's not true. In fact, the nurse did put the information about Duncan's travel from Africa into the doctor's chart. He just didn't see it.
Ooh. Yep.
Okay, so strike one.
Yep.
Even later, the CDC director speculated that she'd infected herself. A breach in protocol, he claimed, was the culprit. He later clarified that statement, saying that he didn't want to give the impression that it was a nurse's fault or anyone else's. But in almost the next sentence, he immediately implicated Amber Vincent, who was diagnosed with Ebola after returning from a trip to Ohio on a commercial flight. Now, you say she should never have been on that commercial flight. That's exactly what the director of the CDC said. She should not have traveled on a commercial airline. But the CDC had, in fact, given her permission to fly to Ohio. And so they were the ones, potentially, who screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suspect that part of this is nurses around the country going, you know what? I know what the science is. You're being political or motivated by panic or something like that. I'm going to start pushing back. And I think that might be part of this particular woman's story.
I can't even. I mean, that's like. I know you said it wasn't a well thought out point, but that's really convincing. I think you're totally right.
Wow.
I wish I have no. I mean, that's.
Let me tell you something. That has never happened.
I mean, no, really. I have a lot of Facebook friends who are nurses because I used to work as a nursing assistant, and many of them have posted articles with pretty much the same thing, and they're like, "Yeah, we get kind of blamed for everything. Like, we're short staffed, and then we get blamed because we don't get meds on time, or we miss this or that, but we don't have enough people and too many patients, and yeah, they just kind of get short of in the of a stick a lot. That's why I said I couldn't go to nursing school. Way too hard.
Yeah.
You know, doctors. are seen as leaders, I think, in medicine, right? I mean, they sort of lead the treatment team. You know, they're sort of at the top of the hierarchy, and yet I think along with that, you know, with great responsibility. No, what's the thing? What is it? What is
great power?
Great power comes great responsibility. And that means that you have to treat people with respect. And I'm not certain that that happens all the time. Hi, applicants. They're coming through.
They're like, what are
they're
they
like,
doing?
Stop talking to me. Why are
you waiting? You get that fantastic contrast of the sweatpants student who's been accepted and in med school versus the person who wears a suit and looks nice and is cheerful.
None of us are wearing sweatpants.
No one's crying yet.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good about that.
We all look pretty put together today. Mm-hmm. You know,
on a
stop looking at me, Dave.
Before we move on, though, we should bring on a nursing student or a nurse. This is a great topic, I think, and worth discussing.
Yeah,
it's true.
I think so. I totally agree. And I want to say to the future doctors out there, do not make a nurse mad.
Oh,
God, no.
You know they really run the show.
They do. Yeah, they absolutely do. But they also are, you depend on them, doctors, future doctors. You will depend on them. And they, and you need them. So treat them that way, and things will go well.
Well, as a person who worked at the hospital, who was often given orders from people who were maybe not his boss, aka nurses, quite frequently, I think it can continue down the line to just appreciate the people around you and understand that the hospital doesn't run with one or two people or just a certain group of people. It's a large there are a large number of people working behind the scenes. And it always seems like there's someone else that someone throws all of their crap on, and all of a sudden it's their fault, and it just keeps working down the line until you get to those bottom line people that are getting paid the least, that are doing probably the most work, and
it all rolls downhill.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate. Yeah, I'm not gonna specify what it is. Use your imagination.
I want to do that. Oh, hey.
Can we interview God someday? Does that thing have a...
Is that God?
Can we do that?
I got the button.
The God button?
Okay, well, we'll be back in just a second on the Short Code Podcast.
The Art of Medicine Podcast explores topics in medicine through the lens of the arts and social sciences. Learn about an epileptic woman who created a virtual reality grand mal seizure, what doctors can learn from jazz musicians, and the experience of sexual assignment in a medicalized body. Download us on iTunes and visit us at www.theartofmedicinepodcast.com. We are a member of the Vocalis Network, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
We're back on the Shortcode Podcast. Thank you for returning. I'm so sorry, Lisa Weir, that you have to go.
I'm really sorry, too, mostly because it's for an exam.
Yeah, she's got to go take a Mechanisms of Health and Disease 1.
Oh,
what is that?
The new curriculum.
You don't have to worry about it.
Get excited.
Okay.
It's like an everything class, all in one.
Pretty much. They took all the old classes and dumped them in a bucket and stirred it up, and then dumped it back out.
Into your head.
Or head. Well, it tastes kind of like I dumped everything in my fridge together and stirred it up.
Well, good luck with that.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
We need a sound effect, like a walking out. It's in a Western.
I don't know what that is.
Dripping into a tub.
Hey, before we move on, I want to point out that we are preparing for our annual Technology and Medical School Survey. So if you go to our website at theshortcoat.com, look for the rather prominent link on the right there to fill out the survey, and you can help us with that. Appreciate it.
And I got a story.
No.
Yeah, story time.
Oh, and send us your tweets.
Oh, yeah, send us your
tweets. Cole wants your tweets. I want questions via tweet.
That sounds suspect.
Is that allowed on this podcast?
I don't know.
Is that going to be
censored? It's hip. Well, if we tell them it's not allowed, that's better.
Yes.
Yeah, then he'll definitely
don't send
do
us
it.
Your tweets.
Don't send.
Oh, there's more penguins walking past
so
us. All right, so here's the story. Prototypical. This is the cutest story, I think, in science. Prototypical 3D miniature stomachs have been developed. That's wow. adorable,
you're
right?
So precious.
So, research searched for the cure of stomach-related problems, such as ulcers, H. pylori, cancer. The deal with the stomach tissue is, you know, the stomach is it's a flora. It's a microbiome. This right. isn't just a tissue that we're affecting. There's a lot going on there.
Yep.
And thus, if we're going to study it, we need to have a full replicant model. So, they have these stem cells that are called pluripotent stem cells, which you learn about in school. They develop into any human organ, and they've been able to induce certain genes in them to create a full stomach.
Cool. Okay,
this is cool. They're about 3 millimeters in diameter, the size of a pea. Oh,
what? Are you going to starve to death from this
well, that's
thing?
All, like, what? So you're
I
not going
to get to use them, Will.
Yeah. So we take a bacteria or a bacterium, basically a single one, and put it in this little pea, and then we can try to treat it based in the acidic stomach environment, as opposed to just treating a bacteria on a petri dish of blood or sheep auger or something like that.
Cool.
Huh. So I thought it was cute. I thought it was adorable.
And they're teeny tiny little enzymes.
Everything's like adorable about it, right?
Miniature digestive juices.
And so this paves the way for other research, by the way, for other organs as we slowly develop tiny organs. And then, I mean, I think we all see the end goal is tiny people, right?
I like clearly.
I mean, that's what's happening. That's where it's going.
One day.
Tiny pet person.
Like
pet person. I didn't know that's where it was going, but
I mean, it's pretty obvious.
I read about such things this week, but it was the male reproductive organ that was being created.
You just come across these articles?
I do. I search for these things. I elected in the end not to include it in the podcast, but it's actually kind of important because you know the penis is a very complicated organ.
Yes.
So as it was expressed in the article, there is a complexity of organs that goes from basically flat organs like the skin, and then you've got tubular organs like the intestine,
stomach,
or the stomach, and then you've got solid organs like the liver or the spleen or whatever that are very complicated and difficult to reproduce. So this particular person has created basically rabbit penises that he's transplanted onto rabbits, and they function and do all the things that rabbit penises should do. And the end game, you would think, is, well, you know, I mean, of course, part of the end game is, you know, penis transplants, because people lose their organs due to you know, various diseases or injuries or whatever. But also these really complex solid organs, and you know, so we're on our way via the penis.
It's. I mean, you think about. Why? You always hear about. I think pig.
Why there?
It's
a urologist. First of all, it's a urologist doing this. So, of course, I guess that makes sense.
You don't trust a urologist with your heart, would you?
No.
Well, so.
Yeah, I guess if he was like, "I'm gonna wreck a heart," people would be like, "Yeah, no funding for you."
Exactly. Could you imagine a world though where transplant surgery becomes sort of antiquated, you know, removing from a person's no longer going to be
like, we'll fix that. It's outpatient surgery.
It'll be like a horror film. You know, someone like back in the day, they used to literally take your kidney out and give it to your brother.
Give it to somebody else.
And that's like horror, right? I mean, that's crazy. This is an interesting.
It's like the Sweeney Todd of the,
I missed it, by the way. Englert in Iowa City had a screening of Rocky Horror Picture Show at midnight, I think, the other day for Halloween. I missed it. I think
people
even
know what that is anymore? Are they
done
too
with
young?
Rocky Horror?
Whoa! You cannot.
Why?
Wow.
I don't know. Never really got into the whole Rocky Horror thing. Sorry.
Are you too cool or just didn't like it?
I'm not cool.
You're very cool, Dave.
I just never really, I mean, I went to, you know, I've been to my requisite share of like Rocky Horror showings with people up in the front, acting it out.
Didn't go with the right group of people.
And never really thought to myself, oh my God, this is awesome. I mean, I might have thought, oh, it's okay. Anyway. Sorry.
Sorry.
Did I ruin your statement?
Yeah.
What a jerk I am. You're like, Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm like,
so
yeah, it kind of sucks.
Man,
so excited.
Debbie Downer. I thought it was exciting. So, people.
I just realized what an a-hole.
I know. He was like, his eyes lit up. He was like, boom, shut down.
Yeah.
Oh, it's time you people realize that I'm the ultimate arbiter of what is good and not in the universe.
That's so funny.
I'm just putting it out there.
How about this story? You might be suffering from this, which is why you're so grumpy. People with chronic fatigue syndrome, this is a real thing, and they've proven it. And so the
there's chronic fatigue syndrome.
Chronic fatigue syndrome. This means that you go for more than 6 months of having, no matter how much rest you get, you suffer from joint pain, muscle pain, short-term memory loss, and these huge sleep patterns, you know, just hours and hours in your bed. But diagnosing it was always this sort of, it's a myalgia, it's sort of this non-diffuse, maybe you're depressed, maybe there's something else going on, but this is actually a true syndrome quantified by CT scan in the brain. The certain parts of your brain will actually, you know, be hypertrophic or hypotrophic, right? Smaller, atrophied, pardon me. Yeah, and this is a real syndrome.
Okay, so wait a minute. If we accept,
I'm gonna put this up.
If we accept,
I do not trust this.
PubMed. Here we go. if we accept that behavior and emotion resides in the brain, wouldn't we expect that if it was a psychiatric disorder, wouldn't we expect there to be changes in the brain?
Which there are, and that's what what made it a disease. Before this, it was just a syndrome.
Right. This is what I don't get about these whole like, oh, it's just in your head. Well, yeah, because that's where
most things are.
That's where most things are.
My perception of the world typically takes place out of my head.
Right.
Not always. All right. So this is a Stanford. They compared MRIs of 15 patients, chronic fatigue syndrome diagnosed, and then scanned 14 individuals, same gender, same health, age matched. They found the patients with chronic fatigue syndrome had slightly less white matter in their brains. And white matter contains your brain's communication cables, you know, enables them to talk to one another. Specifically, they saw abnormalities in the right hemisphere and found that two connection points in the brains, the chronic fatigue patients, were thicker or thinner, depending on the area. So there's actually structural change in these people.
And they did this by MRIs?
This is done by MRI scan.
Huh.
Those boys over at Stanford. So they know what they're doing. Boys and girls.
I mean, from my experience, you would have to see significant changes to be calling something abnormal on an MRI.
Okay.
In terms of like gray matter versus white matter. Like you're saying that white matter is smaller or thinner?
They said there were certain points that were especially thick and other points that were especially thin. And it was consistent between men, women, different race, different age. So,
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that this is the first research study of the type. It could be disproved tomorrow for all I know. But
see, that's great. Here's my soapbox moment, I guess.
So yeah, let's hear it.
These studies come out, which is fine. It might be a valid study. It might be true. However, this one study comes out and the media grabs it. Holy moly.
Oh, yes. We've talked about this many times. Yeah.
Okay. So we don't revisit it.
No, you can get up on your soapbox.
Keeps open.
We're here to educate.
And then people run wild. Like, for example, Ebola, right? When that first thing, oh my God, right? Like, and then you start learning, okay, maybe it's not as like, you don't have to like look at the person you get Ebola. You like start learning more about the facts rather than the media explosion. And so this is something I think is definitely, I mean, interesting, but I can see someone coming like, yeah, I've been having 6 months of joint pain and blah, blah. And they'll go to the doctors and be like, I have this. And then you tell them, it might not be this. You might have something else, but their mind has kind of been fixated on, you know, saying it's this. And they'll want like an MRI, but the MRIs are not cheap. They have to be, you know, if it's going to be covered by insurance, it's going to have like a doctor have to say it, right?
They need more. So you're just saying that they need more information.
Yeah.
And odds are chronic fatigue is probably lifestyle based. I mean, statistically, right? It's probably due to either high blood sugar, maybe it's due to poor eating. Like there's so many other factors before we get to this point.
But someone that sees that and like sounds like me, and then that's kind of like kind of rooted, but not always.
And so does this get back to a sort of higher soapbox, which is that population
education? We're soapboxing off now, are we?
Can we soapbox? Yeah.
Okay.
It's very cool. So does this get to patient education? Is that ultimately the issue for you, or is it the media? You know, which side of this do we look at it from?
Clearly, you guys have talked about this before. No, I don't. I would say it's probably patient education. I think that's kind of our goal. I mean, that's our job as, you know, physicians. And
but here's the thing. I would be willing to bet that most patients trust Oprah more than they trust their physicians. I think that is the stupidest thing in the world, but it's true. I mean, you know, Oprah made Dr. Oz.
Yeah.
Made, you know, and then we've got that doctor's show, The Doctors.
The Doctors.
Oh, which I've never actually watched it before.
They wear scrubs on TV. Because you never know. You never know in surgery.
You're going to have to
pen tube trachea.
Jump right in and do some surgery right there.
I always like that. Or The Doctors. doctors that wear scrubs on the driving range sometimes. I'm always like, you couldn't just have a pair of shorts in your car. Like,
that's ridiculous. No,
you see that ever?
That is utterly ridiculous. I mean, I don't know that I ever bring a spare pair of clothing, with me. I mean, I have to just wear scrubs everywhere I go. In their defense, they are comfortable.
Oh, and they're busy.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
They're busy guys. So I don't want to, and who knows, maybe one day one of us will be that guy. But I hope none of us do.
It's an excuse to be able to wear pajamas wherever you want to.
I was intrigued to note that JAMA Dermatology reports that almost half of the top 125 colleges listed in U.S. News and World Report's best colleges for undergraduate education have indoor tanning facilities.
What?
I actually saw that as
Whoa,
well.
Whoa, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Like, not within the city, but actually university funded.
So within, let's see, the Midwestern, so as I understand it, off-campus housing facilities are common, or that have tanning facilities are common, and it is somewhat common for them to be able to use campus cash cards to use those tanning facilities. So, for instance, off-campus housing facilities, tanning is free to tenants in 96% of the cases. So that's one of the perks of living in these off-campus housing things. But even on campus, I think there's something like 13% of these places have them on campus. Like, I mean, that's just kind of...
Yeah. It's like a cigarette dispensing machine in the dorm, you know?
When I was in college 25 years ago, cigarette machines were actually pretty common.
That is strange.
On campus. And while I was there, they were banned.
Okay.
So, you know, that's like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
It's like a selling point. It's like, hey, come to our school. We have tanning. You can.
It is.
You can tan. Well, you know, this is what apparently young people do. They go out and get tan. Well, you're looking very tan.
I'm Willis. Asian. I am tan.
Okay. Dave didn't want to go there.
I can go there. Right? Yeah, that's self.
I'm not afraid. Asian.
Whoa. Cut that out, please.
Get rid of that.
No, but I think that's interesting. I think that, I mean, I don't know why that would be. I mean, I guess...
Well, it's the same reason why... okay, so, again, in my day, we...
So far back.
It's been a quarter of a century, which tears my heart out. But we didn't have things like campus center wellness recreation centers like we do over here. I mean, we had like individual gyms with some weights, but we didn't have like climbing walls and lazy rivers and stuff like that. That's one data point. The other one is we didn't have, you know, we basically lived in cells.
Yes.
And we didn't have these like, you know,
nice fancy
suites with, you know, if we had suites, they were like, you know, shower, common area that was a cell, and then other cells that we actually put our bedrooms in. Yeah.
Maybe a chair.
I had an actual dent in the wall into which to hang my clothes. No, so.
A dent.
Yeah. It wasn't even a closet. It was a dent. All right,
so basically,
what I'm saying is that you know, these are all things that colleges are doing now to attract students.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that they know is that students, and I think I read in the article that especially women, young women, students really like to tan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Not all of them, but you know, some people really like to tan. And so if they're going to attract people, that's one of the things that they're going to do to get that market going.
I mean, it's so hard nowadays with so many colleges and so many great programs that you basically have to find like that odd niche, you know, like, or mm-hmm. something. But no, you're right. Like, Dave, it definitely changes over time. Like, now everyone's much more health conscious. So like anytime you see like, oh, they have a nice smoothie bar that's near the campus or something or whatever, like, it's a weird selling point, but
every little bit helps, I guess.
Every little helps.
Well, and you're marketing to a population of 17-year-olds, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, my 17-year-old decision-making capacity was pretty limited. And so I think, you know, maybe
suntan
a tan
or not
tanning machine and smoothie machine might have hit tipping point.
I know a tan is supposed to signify sort of health and you know, genetic fitness and all that kind of stuff, which I will point out that I'm a very tan person myself.
So you've been using that suntan, Dad.
No, I'm just saying I have the genetic fitness. Anyway, I guess where I'm going with that is that, you know, why is it that if you look orange, is that supposed to help? Is that supposed to, like, go ahead, Matt.
My own personal opinion, I mean, growing up in the Midwest, in the Midwest, that was just like the thing. When you go to the dances, it's winter, all the girls go and get tans. I always said it was stupid because I thought it was ridiculous to pay for skin cancer. And I worked out in the cornfields in the summer, and I was like, I get paid to get skin cancer, all right? You guys have to go pay for it.
And actually pay for it.
Yeah. Now, but in the winter, of course, you know, not a lot of working out in the cornfields. But I was fine being a very, very pale young man. And so, you know, whatever. You know, they can go do it, but...
I mean, nothing. Melanoma's pretty attractive.
Yeah.
I mean,
having
like a good
having scars from your melanoma removal.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have breaking news.
Yeah. Oh, breaking.
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 Pottermore.
Yes.
Has released a new J.K. Rowling writing piece.
Wow.
On the website.
Oh, well.
Interesting.
So I'm not a huge Harry Potter guy, but people freak. So I know this is a. This is a deal.
I'm going to point out that by the time this news actually breaks,
it will not be breaking.
That will be 1 week from now.
Yeah.
Breaking news.
This is an evergreen story, Dave.
This just in last week.
I like that.
That's pretty good.
What is that? Was that supposed to be Morse code? Like, what was that? Is that?
Yeah, Morse code.
Did it say news, or what did it say?
I don't know.
Like, back sitting in the, there, like, news, oh, it's news, guys.
Back in the 20s.
News companies definitely.
That's how news
went. Yeah, I mean, that's how it's still done, right? Everything is transferred.
Stop.
That was slightly before I went to college. Can we all just admire Cole's beard? Which is becoming fuller and fuller.
I think that should end up on the Shortcut Podcast website as well.
Talk about impressive. A sign of genetic fitness right there.
Puberty hitting late, but I got it. So I didn't know this about beards as a young man. I assumed you grew, like hair, you grow to a certain point, and then that is your beard. I didn't realize over time, as you trim it, somehow other things fill in, and that's where the beardness comes, which is now verb.
That hasn't actually happened to me yet.
I shave every day hoping that it fills in. Look at this. I still have this. I don't know what this is, but whatever this is.
This is an audio podcast, so you gotta explain what's happening. Explain what you're pointing at.
It is my chin / Adam's apple, okay. And then it has a little patch of hair, and then it stops at my chin, and then it continues on my mustache.
Sure. So I always want... That's a weird one. Yeah. The distribution is an interesting question, though. So some people have the scars, right?
Oh, yeah.
And did that happen to you, though?
No.
No, so there's no trauma.
So I need a cut on my skin, and then it'll grow in.
I think, no, not at all. I think it's like exactly opposite. Anyway, beard fullness, something that is a real thing. I didn't realize that.
Interesting.
That comes over time.
I have not completely shaved my facial hair in roughly, let's see, 1995.
Oh my God. So you're using a little bzzz.
Yeah. I mean, that's as far as I got. I think I shaved once for a job interview, and then my wife told me to put it back.
This is good guy talk, Dave.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Let's talk Argyle socks. Let's get into it.
Well, if we want to speak guy talk, I just got this article pointed out to me, I think yesterday, by Lisa. So you can tell me what you think of this.
All right.
Published in Cancer Epidemiology, they're suggesting that men who have sex with over 20 women have a 28% lower chance of being diagnosed with prostate cancer. Although, unfortunately, for gay men out there, it does increase your risk, but no more than not having sex at all. So... there you go.
This is confusing to me.
That is confusing.
I'm having trouble parsing this.
I'm just...
The number... It's because 20 is just... to me, it seems like the real benefit would be gained from the amount of sexual encounters as opposed to the number of partners.
Yeah,
What if you have one partner, but then you have like multiple? We'll stay away from words. But
we're dancing
fine lines.
We don't actually need words on this audio podcast.
We'll be listening.
No, a lot of pointing.
I think this just proves that several of my friends who I will not mention that have many conquests were not doing it just to have conquest. They were clearly trying to lower the risk of prostate cancer.
They go up to the girl like, excuse me, you're number 19. I'm trying to reach 20 for my health benefits.
Will you please help me achieve health benefits?
Dose-dependent response.
This could be on the wellness passport, I think.
Yes, that will have to be suggested to the
suggest that to CAPS.
For all those adults, the wellness passport, we have a class that requires us to submit, I think, 5 to 7 activities that are keeping us mentally sane. And so this is an attempt by the University of Iowa to promote wellness in their medical students, because sometimes they don't necessarily take care of their spirituality.
Well, I think it's also an attempt to help them understand what it's like to counsel a patient in their wellness, their own wellness activities. It's not just about your wellness activities.
They don't care about you.
Yes.
Well,
you can't counsel patients unless you know what you're counseling them about.
Well, there's dual. So the whole problem and good part of it. So if you quantify anything, right? So if you say like, I want to get a certain GPA, you're more statistically likely to get that GPA just by sheer act of writing it down, right?
Not
Dave wrote it down many times. I tried that. Never got there.
For non-Daves. This is a real phenomenon. And so this wellness passport sets out specific goals and you attempt them. And that's a good thing. On the flip side, by quantifying spirituality, humanity, physical fitness, you automatically, in my opinion, take away from spirituality, humanity. You know, by trying to create benchmarks associated with it, it relegates it to the scientific community, which is not what this is about.
Interesting.
So there's interest. That's just my view, but...
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I guess you guys would be the pioneers of this experience.
So far, the overwhelming opinion of the class seems to be that it's not something they enjoy. but I think the thought behind it is definitely, I mean, it's a positive thought, right? Like, have your students take care of themselves, you know, like both physically, mentally, emotionally. Like that's a good thought. That seems like it comes off as you care about your students. You want them to not only have all this information flowing in their head, but someday actually be able to use it because you're alive to use it.
Right.
So
right.
That's a good thought.
It's a benefit. Yeah.
Well, and let's acknowledge the fact that being in medical school is difficult, and some people have a very hard time dealing with it, and one of the ways that you might be better at dealing with it is if you're taking care of yourself and you're being good to yourself and you're sort of engaging in healthy behaviors, and so that's a plus.
Speaking of, my yoga instructor told me this is one of my healthy activities.
Mm-hmm.
She told me my beard was not very peaceful. She asked for it to go. So,
Whoa!
Your yoga instructor told you to shave your beard?
She said it was not a peaceful piece of facial hair, and it needed to go.
Is it because you haven't allowed it to fill in quite enough yet?
I listen. I don't question. You know, it's a very serene environment, and so I took the criticism.
Did she say that you would no longer be able to do yoga if you didn't?
Yeah, she also,
the rustling of your beard
is distracting
against
me.
The mat is
like that noise. No, so that was my wellness activity, but it was less well after.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Where's this yoga?
I'm a hothouse guy.
Yeah.
So I go there. And I have all the tall guys get the back problems going. I don't know if you guys get the lower back issues. It seems like most guys as they age get the lower back. Do you get it, Dave, at all?
I think my lower back issues have more to do with width than height.
Yeah, like, but you still... the secret is you do a little stretching and it kind of works itself out a lot better than a lot of other techniques.
If I went to... this is going to be a long part. If I went to hothouse yoga, what would I experience?
So they'd crank the heat.
Oh, well.
It's a little humid. It's hot. There'd be about 40 other people, maybe 30 other people, an instructor. Mm-hmm. She's very nice, very helpful. It's very much at your own pace.
Is it smelly?
Yeah.
like stinky feet smelly? Or like
no,
sweaty?
No, I mean, it's generally women that go to it, and women are better about keeping their feet. In my experience, they keep just their hygiene is better.
Now, the truth comes out. This is why he is going. He says it's a pass for it, but really.
Yeah, it's to meet yoga women.
Wait, did you start going to this because of the wellness passport, or were you already doing it?
No, I went because of my lower back, but then all right. It actually became, yeah, I can use that. That's good defense, right? But I think the wellness passport also reminds me occasionally, hey, you know, you've kind of been a slug lately. Why don't you go do something active and
you're like,
get out?
Hi, ladies. I have lower back pain.
And a beard. Yeah.
And a not very peaceful beard. All right. I think we got to close this out. Thanks for listening to the Short Code Podcast. I like how I'm echoey today. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you'd like to say hi to that special basic science professor in your life, leave us a message at theshortcode.com. Do follow us on Twitter because Cole likes that sort of thing. So you can stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by the strange world we live in and a generous donation by the Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producers are Dave Edler and Jason Lewis. Our opening theme is by Johann Sebastian Bach. And our closing music was written by David Mook and Ben Raleigh and performed by Larry Marks. Oh, I played the wrong closing music.
We will be doing
this. I am not very good at this. Talk to you in 1 week.
Happy Halloween last week. Woo.